Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast.
For product managers and innovators.
Your host is Chad McAllister, helping product managers become product masters. Listen and get ready to take your career to the next level. For the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host, and welcome to the 100th episode of the Everyday Innovator Podcast. I have a little something different for us, being this is the kind of a big milestone, the 100th episode. I don't have a guest today, and I'll tell you more about that in a bit. And also, unfortunately, I have a cold, and I just couldn't wait any longer to record this episode, or it would have ended up being the 101 episode. So bear with me. Hopefully, we'll make it through without coughing. I have three topics I plan to share on this podcast episode. First, learning from self-reflection, and then why this podcast is called The Everyday Innovator, and what it means to be an everyday innovator, and then finally, a few of my answers to some questions about product management that I was asked recently. Before we get started on that, though, I want to tell you about a coffee cup. And if you want to see this coffee cup that I'm going to describe, just go to the show notes for this episode at theeverydayinnovator.com/100. So I wanted to have a coffee cup for everyday innovators, you know, and for me to represent myself as an everyday innovator. So I had some specific design requirements in mind for this coffee cup. First, I don't like cups that are too small, and I don't particularly like cups that are too large. When I was looking at designing this cup, it seemed like a 14-ounce was just right, that right balance between, okay, 12-ounce is too small, and the 16s are pretty large and clunky. So it's a 14-ounce cup. And I wanted it to be kind of different, right? So I needed to convey innovation in some kind of, you know, straightforward sense at least. And so it has a striking color contrast. It's a white cup with a bold blue, a cobalt blue handle. And on the inside is also the same cobalt blue. And so it has that kind of two-tone look. And then for designing what is actually on the cup, when you're holding it in your right hand, the Everyday Innovator light bulb logo, the very cool, stylish light bulb logo, is facing you. And then on the back side, the side that people would see as they come towards you, it says in nice big bold letters, "Stand back, I'm innovating." And I created several different kinds of taglines for a coffee cup as I was designing this and sent out a survey to get some feedback. And that was the clear winner. That was most popular. "Stand back, I'm innovating." Now, I also made sure this cup appealed to both men and women, and I've shared it with men and women, and it's quite the stunning cup. And if you're curious why I'm telling you about this, it's not because I have the cup for sale or anything like that, but I am giving away 10 of these coffee cups to help celebrate this 100th episode of the podcast. And to get one, be one of the first 10 people to go to the show notes for this episode and click on the Get Roadmap button that you'll find at the bottom of the page. So at the bottom of every blog page. And you'll receive from me an email with that product mastery roadmap, what you get when you click on the Get Roadmap button. And that roadmap shows you how to double and more your success as a product manager, creating the right products more often. And the show notes for this episode are at theeverydayinnovator.com/100. And as I shared, you'll also find a picture of the coffee cup in the show notes. It is a thing of beauty. Just go to theeverydayinnovator.com/100. And what I'll do then is I'll contact the first 10 people who request the Product Mastery Roadmap and ask for your shipping address. Now, I'm only able to ship coffee cups to addresses in the United States. So if you have a shipping address outside the U.S., I won't be able to send you one. However, I know for my valuable listeners that are outside the U.S., and there are a lot of you, I really appreciate you all, you will still find great value in the Product Mastery Roadmap, which I'll send to you by email. That's a little bit on the coffee cup. I hope some people will check out. You also notice when you go to the show notes, if you haven't been there before, the website has a new look and design, and hope you enjoy that. A little cleaner, make it easier to find information about these podcasts and the innovators that I have the pleasure of interviewing. For this special episode, my daughter had a suggestion, and she actually listens to this podcast some of the time, and she has helped out at times with the aspects of the podcast. And you actually heard her back on a previous episode when we were talking about future innovation leaders and how she was studying robotics and 3D design along with my son. So her suggestion was that I should interview myself. She said, "You know, Daddy, you never tell people much about yourself on your podcast. And so you should do that. And you should just interview yourself." And she explained to me how this would work. And this is how she thought this should go. I should start off saying, "Hi, Chad. Thanks for being a guest on the podcast today." And then say, "Well, thanks, Chad. It's a real pleasure being here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Chad?" "Well, I'm glad you asked, Chad." And that's how she envisioned this working out, which I think would be really cute and adorable and potentially a little bit too confusing. So I won't go down that path for now, at least. Maybe we'll try it in a future episode. But I do want to kind of, in that spirit of telling you about myself a bit, share some self-reflection, some key moments that led me towards product management. And I do this because self-reflection is a really important activity. It's an important activity for us as product managers and innovators because we need to influence others. It's an important activity for anyone that's involved in leadership. And I encourage you to take a few moments yourself and do some self-reflection. Think about those key milestones that led you to product management or that might be leading you in that direction now. So for me, some things that stand out. The first one was when I was a mere 7 years old. My neighbor across the street, he was an electrical engineer, and he's actually the one that taught me to solder. And at seven, I soldered together my first Radio Shack electronic kit, which was a metal detector. And that was great fun, and I learned the importance of a mechanical connection, and you heat the wires where you want the solder to go. You don't heat the solder, right? So these are important basics. Later in high school, I worked on a scale model creating a hovercraft that was part of an advanced physics course. And I created this model myself, and I just loved doing that sort of thing, right? Building mechanical and electronic equipment. No big surprise that college years had me studying electrical engineering, and I really loved electronics. And one of the classes you take, and this would have been, I think, year three, so as a junior, when you're starting to really get into your core electrical engineering courses, turned out to be a pivotal course for me, and it was solid states. And this was the course I was so excited for, to really dive into how electronic devices are created, right? Like the transistor is a big focus of solid states. And I was so excited for the course, and I was actually being the eager beaver and going well above and beyond, and I got two other books in addition to the textbook that I was reading because I really love this subject so very much. And I had an instructor that was just, for me, super frustrating. And took all the joy out of solid states and electronics for me. And it was kind of a depressing experience. I just found the instructor was picking on little pieces and just piling on the work so much that took out the joy that I had for this naturally. While I was frustrated and really disliked this instructor at the time, now I appreciate him because it really did send my education and my career on a different direction. What I focused on next was electromagnetics. And one of my professors was Ron Sega. He went on to be an astronaut and then the Undersecretary of the Air Force, and he's now the Systems Engineering Director at Colorado State University, and just a great person to learn from. And he offered in the required electromagnetics course that you had to take, and then there were others I took because I wanted to, that anyone getting an A on the final exam could apply to be a research assistant. So I studied really hard for this exam, and ended up working as a research assistant as an undergraduate for a couple of years. One of the things we did was we built an anechoic chamber. This is that nice, large steel room. Couldn't tell you the dimensions offhand now, but a really large room, all steel walls, and then these large foam, carbon-impregnated foam triangles, foam pyramids that lined all the walls of the chamber. So it made a very electromagnetically quiet environment. Any waves, whether they be sound waves or microwaves, any kind of waves going through that room just got deadened by the materials on the walls. And so it was a very quiet environment. That was just kind of cool by itself. Ran lots of experiments, collected data, and helped write research papers that were later submitted to journals and conferences during those 2 years that I was a research assistant. And that really got kind of this experimental mentality going for me, right? Frankly, some pleasure, but also purpose in running experiments, collecting data, and seeing how things changed, right? And then being able to quickly rerun experiments. It kind of started me down this path of thinking more in terms of quick experiments to be able to get to some conclusion and generate some ideas off of things that you were observing. Out of college, I was in a systems engineering group that developed prototypes. This was the perfect environment for me. You know, over and over, we were developing prototypes of software systems. It was just such a great experience. We had customers come in, we got to know their needs, and we would put together prototypes for them. And I led many of those efforts and just really enjoyed that rapid application prototyping kind of environment. Kind of a key thing that happened was I was sent off to the Washington, D.C. area. The team was back in Colorado. And I was sent off to demonstrate a capability that another company was developing. And this was one of those somewhat strange situations that I had found myself in a few times before. This was a government customer who was expecting this demonstration. Because of the nature of the work, you had to have special security clearances to be able to demonstrate what was going on. And I had those special security clearances at the time. And the government, the other contractor that was actually doing the work that was supposed to be developing the system, did not. So through some relationship between our companies, we got asked to provide the demonstration. I had lots of good experience at this time doing demonstrations and was sent out to do that. I was going a week in advance to really get merged with the users, the people that this system, the other company was creating, the users that were using it, supposed to be using it, that didn't exist yet, but the users that were supposed to be using it, I got to spend a whole week with them just observing what their work was, right? Really living in their shoes in a regard for that week. And I learned a lot about the problems that they had and the key issues they dealt with and what possible solutions might be to really help them with some of these problems. I was doing ethnographic research really without even understanding at the time what kind of the key principles of ethnography were. But it was such a great background in just being able to observe users and understand what they did, right? So you can kind of see where this is going in the future for, you know, doing product management work. As it turns out, Friday rolls around. This other company is supposed to be sending out their work to me, their software, and nothing. It's just crickets. They don't have anything to send to me. I don't know in the beginning if they were trying to set us up for failure or what was going on. You know, sometimes when you're doing work for different government agencies and there's more than one company involved, it's not uncommon for subcontractors and prime contractors and the like to have some friction. I don't know what was actually going on, but I had spent the week learning what the problem was and what the customer really needed. So I had a computer system with me. This was a 3D graphics computer system. And I spent the weekend banging out a potential prototype, a demonstration of what a solution could look like. And I had some great help from teammates back in Colorado to get this done. And a weekend is a pretty short amount of time. But indeed, pull together this quick demonstration. And come the following week, had the opportunity to demonstrate this to the potential users. It was a hit. Thankfully, I had picked up the right insights from watching them and was able, with the help from the team back in Colorado, put together a prototype that looked like it was actually doing the real thing. It wasn't. It was just a prototype, not functional, but it looked good. And it was a winner. And we received funding for it to create the real system and went back to Colorado and the team there and had a customer working with us every day, literally in our lab, getting feedback regularly from that customer perspective on what the system should be doing, right? So those experiences together, they taught me a lot about understanding the needs of the customer and using prototypes, and then how to, you know, through an experimenting mentality, really rapidly evolve a solution with customers to really satisfy the problems they have, often those unarticulated, unmet needs that can't really describe, but providing value to them and solving their problem. So as my experience grew, working in small businesses, large international companies, and a handful of startups, I became concerned how some products became market winners while others didn't. And you probably have seen this too. You know, even though we were using the same product development processes. So to deeply study the issue and identify how to increase that success rate, right? How do we increase the success rate of developing new products? I completed a PhD program in a business school that allowed me to really focus on product management and innovation. And then you fast forward. In 2006, I got involved with PDMA, the Product Development and Management Association. And they have a certification called the New Product Development Professional, the MPDP. I helped with a study group. Someone else had started the study group. She did a great job with that. I helped kind of evolve that and created an online e-course the following year and helped lots of PDMA chapters get people prepared to pass this MPDP exam and get certified. And it was really a unique approach to learning the concepts that have now been used by many individual project managers, as well as numerous groups at different companies, this virtual study group program. And then in 2008, I started teaching product management and innovation management for a few universities, which I continue to do today. And now my primary work today is providing online training for product managers to become product masters, developing the right products more often, as much as 5 times, a 5x improvement, and able to get the influence that product managers really want and that they need, and to drive the product strategy, creating products that customers love. I also continue offering a popular virtual study group program, which is what grew out of that early experience with PDMA, a program for companies that really helps them to ground their product managers in the disciplines that create success for their organization. And the virtual study group program results in real behavioral change, right? It's not lectures, it's real behavioral change. Product teams get on the same page and learn to move forward together. They're doing the work to get that done. And I had one other recent self-reflection opportunity. I watched The Small Business Revolution. It's available on Hulu. And if you haven't seen this, I encourage you to check it out. If you love business and small business, it's hosted by Robert Herjavec. He's from the Shark Tank, the shark that sits on the one end opposite from Mark Cuban. And then Amanda Brinkman, she's a marketing expert at Deluxe Company. And Deluxe is this company that's been around for decades that makes checks, right? Business checks, personal checks. And they have also started offering services for financial institutions and small businesses. And the show itself is just brilliant in terms of the whole show is a promotion for Deluxe, but it's so incredibly well done. I shared the episodes with my family and we ended up watching them together too. My kids commented that each episode follows the same formula. It starts with Robert and Amanda talking about the small business they're going to help, and then Amanda meets with them, and then Robert joins to talk about profitability, and later the two meet to review what they learned about the business and what they need to do, and then they get the Deluxe marketing team involved, and they share their ideas for promoting the business, and you know, you get the idea, and the same flow goes on through each episode. And I said to my family, well, and they always end with that crying scene. And they all looked at me with these kind of blank expressions on their faces and said, what do you mean? And I said, you know, the part towards the end of the show where Amanda does something special for the small business owners, like, you know, buying them a special piece of equipment that they really needed. And it kind of digs in, you know, it's this very touching scene about how they're really helping these businesses and the people that are behind businesses. And it's driving home the change that they are creating in the lives of the small business owners. And yeah, it's the crying part for me, right? Well, apparently I'm the only one that actually finds this so touching. And my wife commented that that's actually a reflection of who I am. And I bring this up because sometimes self-reflection comes through a stimulus from others, right? It's that feedback that we get from others that can really help us think about ourselves a little bit more deeply and help us uncover maybe what some of our strengths and talents really are. In this case, it was just kind of that reminder for me that I find that so touching because it is a reflection of who I am, because I love helping others make changes that propel their businesses and organization forward. And that's why I'm a product manager and innovator and now teach and coach others, because I want to help others, help product managers indeed become more successful, become those product masters. When I reflect on myself, that's, you know, some of the milestones that really have shaped where I am today. And I share this primarily because I want to encourage you to do something similar. So how about you? Why don't you take a few minutes and reflect on your experiences and how those experiences make you feel and how they contribute to what you're doing or what you want to be doing? Self-reflection helps you become more self-aware, which makes you a better leader and will help increase your influence. And if there's one thing that product managers and innovators need, it is definitely more influence throughout the organization. Self-reflection will help with that. I also want to address the name of this podcast. Why is it called The Everyday Innovator? Well, I chose the title to reflect that all of us are innovators. And some of us just tend to look at problems more closely and consider various ways that those problems could be solved. And these are the everyday innovators, people who do that. When I was in my 20s working for that systems engineering company, one of the most fun activities we would do after work was to go out with colleagues, right, and do that nerdy thing of talking about products we could make, problems that needed solving in a new way. Yeah, it was nerdy, but it was what we loved to do. I guess that was that engineering mindset. And if you do the same sort of thing, if you love talking about problems that need a solution, then you are clearly an everyday innovator. And everyday innovators are on a journey. We want to solve customers' problems, make things that people value, and work with incredible people who enjoy doing the same thing. As everyday innovators, we see problems not as challenges, but as opportunities creating new value. And anyone can be an everyday innovator. But some of us just seem to be kind of more naturally wired that way, right? Seeing opportunities for innovation just in the normal everyday things that we do. And as a teaser for next week, if you listen to the episode that comes out following Monday, it will be number 101. You will hear more about this and how everyone can be an innovator, and more specifically, what innovation type you are. It's a great interview with the person who has developed the 9 types of innovators. And as the final topic I just want to address, recently I was asked by Mark Silver to be interviewed for his blog called Spectacular. His blog is subtitled, "Where Product Pros Stay on Top of the Web," which I love that tagline. And he asked some great questions, and I want to just address them on this episode also. One was, you know, what advice would you share with new product managers? What information do you wish someone had shared with you when you were first starting out? And I'll say, you know, start by building your base. I got wrapped up quickly in just developing products, not really thinking what was needed, right? What was all involved in that. And by building your base, I mean getting grounded in the fundamentals of product management and taking time to do that. I was working as a product manager for 10 years before I even knew the term existed. And if you had asked me at the time what I did, I would say I was a project manager. Now, while project management skills are certainly helpful for us doing product management work, the breadth of knowledge is so much broader, and those sort of things you pick up. But if you built your base purposely, and I did that through that involvement in associations, starting with the Product Development and Management Association, PDMA, and then adding the Association of International Product Marketers and Managers, AIPMM, and there's other groups too you could look at. I highly recommend the knowledge that can be learned through these opportunities and specifically through those professional associations. And I've since developed my own approach for building your base, which I call the IDEA framework, just to get grounded in what the main concepts are that we need to know. And second, recognize that successful market-winning products are created by first having deep insights into customers' problems. You know, I just accidentally discovered that by being able to observe users, you know, for that week, that example I told you about. And that led to new insights that really helped me create a prototype that addressed a lot of the problems. Clayton Christensen, he popularized the thinking of a product in terms of the job the customer hired the product for. You know, what problem did they need solved that caused them to purchase the product? Now, while it's a challenge for new product managers to find time to interact with customers, it is through those discussions with customers, those interviews that we do, the observations that we can do, that's where we really gain insights. And those insights are so very important to what we do. Don't chase what competitors are just doing. It's good to know about what they're up to. But if you're just chasing competitors' actions, you're going to end up with copycat products. You really need to do your own research. There's no guarantee that competitors are really addressing the main pain points. And third, what I wish I would have heard earlier in my career, my advice to young product managers, is that product management is appealing to many people because of that often heard characterization of the role as the mini CEO. Right, it's lifted up as this great, great role where you have all this great control. Well, that expectation sets up new product managers just for disappointment. In time, product managers, which go by lots of different names, right? Might be product owners, product champions, all kinds of names organizations use. They may gain influence to be truly responsible for a product as a CEO would, but even then, their authority is going to be limited. So instead of thinking of a product manager in terms of that mini CEO, think of becoming the chief of knowing your customer's needs and knowing your product. This is where the insights come from. And one last point of advice that I wish I would have received earlier is to have lunch regularly with people in other functions in your organization. Product management is this highly cross-functional role, and your influence is going to grow more quickly if you personally have relationships with people in those other functions and you understand what those other functions are about. And this is pretty easy to accomplish. You know, if each week you just ask someone that you don't know that's in another function in the company to join you for lunch, and you just talk about what their role is about, right? And talk about what you're doing as a product manager and what your role is about. It's a great way to start building a network across the organization, and very importantly, understand what these functions actually do. Another question I was asked was, where do you think product management as a whole is heading? Now, we can trace the roots of product management as a profession back to around the 1930s. And the original term that was coined was brand management, and it was a role that was created at Procter & Gamble. And since then, it has seen slow, steady growth until rather recently, with its popularity really rising in 2015. That laid the groundwork for rapid expansion. In 2015, I call that the year of innovation, and we had numerous leaders of organizations discussing how to create or improve their innovation culture, and a lot of requests for work in innovation assessments and to help organizations with this. And now, in 2016, as we're just coming to the end of this year, this has been the year of the product manager role, and we've seen several headlines and notable news sources describing the role and its desirability to both college graduates as well as companies. You know, this is now what MBAs desire to be, as a product manager, and has taken on a new life of its own. And I see its future heading down a path not unlike what we've seen happen in project management. You know, for years, leaders of our organizations were skeptical about the real value of project management until enough evidence existed to change their minds. Product management is starting to prove itself as leaders are asking how it is important to the organization, and they're recognizing the value it adds. And this is aided by a turbulent nature of most industries and markets. Changes are occurring faster and faster, and products need an owner for them to be successful and to find ways for them to evolve faster and faster. And the growth of product management is also seen at universities. I teach product management and innovation courses for some graduate schools. Just a few years ago, these courses did not exist. Not only are there more courses available, schools are starting to offer graduate specializations, and at the same time, we're seeing some progress in undergraduate programs. So there's really been a big shift and a new emphasis placed on the profession of product management and what are the disciplines and concepts that involves. And one other question that I was asked was, how do you ensure a successful product launch? I always like to think of things in this kind of big model, and I call it the idea model, the idea framework, because it helps me remember it. The idea is IDEA, and then I is for ideation. This is where we come up with the concepts in the first place, and which of those concepts are we going to then develop, which takes us to D. This is where development actually occurs, where we're going from concept through prototypes, making the product or service real. And then in the E, this is where we evolve the product. And by evolve, I'm talking about what happens at product launch and after. We're evolving the product in the marketplace and trying to optimize its performance as the market consumer demands change, as well as competitors' actions, and we're evolving what happens in that marketplace. And then A, because IDE doesn't spell anything, so help me remember this, but the idea framework, A is just for accelerate. It's those activities that we can do that really make everything else better and perform better and faster through ideation, development, and evolution. When it comes to product launch, we're thinking of what happens in the product management lifecycle once that product is ready. And for some of us, that's not product management per se. For others of us, that's only product management. This role does vary by organization and by industry. I think of product management as occurring across that entire spectrum of the idea framework, from where ideas first become known all the way through product is launched and now we're managing its performance as it goes through being introduced to the marketplace, growth, maturity, the natural progression there. So when asked how to have a successful product launch at that point is largely about execution, right? We have the product in place. We have to just execute on a set of steps properly. I don't see product launches themselves failing because of lack of execution nearly as often as I see products failing to win over the market, right? They're failing to do well in the marketplace simply because they weren't solving a real problem. That means that where product launches go bad is really back at the beginning of product development. It's back in that idea and that development phase of the idea framework. A great launch can't save a poor concept. To have a successful launch, we need to start by knowing that indeed we're solving an important problem for customers in a way that a sizable number of customers, of consumers, are going to buy the solution, buy the product that we're providing, creating value for them and value for your organization, and doing it in a manner that is better than the other options from competitors. Now, that's a mouthful to say. Some of the key pieces here is we need to start making sure we have a problem that is worth solving, that indeed we're going to provide a solution that customers will pay for, and that the market is large enough to care about this problem in the first place and solving it. And oh, by the way, we have to make sure we do it in a manner that creates the ability to beat what competitors are offering. If there's no differentiation between our product and competitors, we're going to have a really tough time finding any kind of market acceptance in this. All of that really starts by building your base as a product manager, which, guess what? That's what this podcast is all about, right? It's the simplest way I know to start building that base is just by listening to this podcast. And I so much appreciate that you do that. Thank you for making it through this 100th episode with me. Many more to come. This has been a personal joy of mine to be able to do this, as some of you know from when I've talked about it before. This started by traveling the U.S. for a year, talking to innovators and business owners, and then coming back and wanting to continue those discussions and sharing them with others, and doing that through this podcast. And that's how the Everyday Innovator got to be here. As you know, I always ask my guests for an innovation quote. And since I don't have a guest today, I thought I should share one too. And the quote is a Japanese proverb that simply says, "Fall down 7 times, get up 8. And I love this quote. And it embodies that notion of failing fast, right? And you hear this idea of failing fast, not so that we can fail. I don't want to put the emphasis on the failing aspect, but because we're innovators, we're doing something new. That is fundamentally what innovation is about. It's what we do as product managers, is we make something that is new. And because it's new, we don't know how to do it yet. We're going to learn in the process. So along the way, we're going to fall down some of the time. And what matters is, what did we learn from falling down and get back up and keep moving forward? So that Japanese proverb of fall down 7 times, get up 8, just embodies so much of that nature of what we do as product managers, that we are learning as we go. We should expect that, and we are making progress towards what we need to accomplish, right? Keep getting up. I so much appreciate you listening to this 100th episode, and I would be so glad if you share this with other people too. I make that super easy. Just go to the show notes for this. That's theeverydayinnovator.com/100. You'll find links at the top of the post there for your favorite social media sites. Just click on one and please share this with others too. That will help us together get this profession of product management more established and help others build their base towards becoming product masters. That's what this podcast is about, is building that base and becoming more successful in what we do. Thanks so much for listening, and keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to The Everyday Innovator, which teaches product managers to become product masters. For more resources, please visit our blog at theeverydayinnovator.com.